You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
And welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. It's Mike and Eric bringing you Marvel goodness.
Lots of good old Marvel goodness. Dressed, not just a little bit.
A lot. And it's all dressed with candy canes and sugar plums. We're getting close to Christmas.
You didn't tell me there would be sugar plums.
See, we can't forget the dreidels and gelt as well. So.
Okay.
Because, I'm sorry, in my mind, Captain America is Jewish. Okay, he might not be, but in my mind...
Well, you know.
What do you want me to say? Doofenshmirtz is Jewish?
You know, that could happen.
Yeah, it could. I guess it could.
With the Fantastic Flop reboot, anything is possible.
Anything is possible. He's an angry blogger trying to spread Jewish guilt.
A hacktivist. Is that... That's as they call it.
Yes. Trying to spread Jewish guilt. Okay.
I know. While he's taking over the world. Okay. Now that we have just run the show into the ground already in the first few minutes of airtime.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra!
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Well, tell you what, why don't we start off? Man, we got lots of news. We got Stan Lee, Sony Marvel, little Al Pacino. Sorry, I can't do a Pacino accent.
Say hello to my little friend. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's De Niro.
That's De Niro.
No, that wasn't De Niro. That was Scarface. That was Pacino.
That was Pacino.
Okay. Say hello to my little friend. There, I'll say it again.
Now, we've also got some... We're going to do a S.H.I.E.L.D. recap, season finale, and our reflections of the season. Some Agent Carter news and Guardians as well. And, of course, that small little thing that we usually do at the end of the show, new comic book picks for the week. So,
yeah.
Stan Lee, this was kind of cool. I watched the video. It was a 75 years of Marvel video at the Hammer Museum, which I'm not sure where that's located. It's okay. It's not important. What was important was it was a panel moderated by Kevin Smith, big comic book guy, of course, writer of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Did some writing on Daredevil. I believe it was in the Daredevil movie. Let's see. It was Stan Lee, and I can't remember. It was also, I can't remember his name, but the father of Ultron. I want to say he's Rob some. I can't remember. Anyhow, it was shocking news. Stan Lee discusses the possibility of a crossover between Marvel and the other studios. And of course, we're going to hit on this a little, we'll actually hit on it next, but... it was a book signing who also at the museum, and this fan who was dressed as Captain America would ask whether the three would make it into a film together, talking about...
basically Avengers, X-Men, Spider-Man.
That's
the big three.
Right. His quote was, "It's something that Marvel is very concerned about. It's very difficult to bring them all together because these characters are so successful and make so much money that the studios have the rights and don't want to let them go." Well, duh. So that's something.
Thank you, Captain Understatement of the Year, Stan Lee.
Exactly. So that's something that all the lawyers and all the production companies have to work out. Whether they get it worked out, I don't know. So he's obviously a fan of the possibility. But then again, if that happens, he banks pretty good. So financially, yeah. I'm sure he wants that to happen.
Well, as the guy who's credited with the creation of so many characters in the Marvel Universe that we know and we love, and even a few that we're not so fond of, you know, I can see where he's coming from.
Right.
I'm sure it's almost a no-brainer that he would like to see it happen. And I'll be honest with you, I'd like to see it happen. I know there are many Marvel fans out there that would love to see it happen.
Oh, yeah.
Simply because you see it happen so many times in the comics. But, I mean, the reality is the reality. This is business. Fox is not going to let go of their mutants.
No. Nope.
Sony, and we'll touch on this in a minute, Sony just does not seem to want to even share Spider-Man with Marvel Studios. It's just whether they get it worked out, Stan doesn't know, and I've got a pretty good answer. I said, "Hey, Stan, that ain't happening."
Right. Well, he followed up with another interesting comment. He goes, it's a shame that Marvel can't distribute every one of them, because then we could put them all together in a movie that would make $100 trillion. You know what? He's right.
Yeah.
I mean, then we could have Civil War the way it needs to be done.
You could have Civil War done right. You could have
Secret Wars. Oh, yeah, my Lord. Secret Wars would be amazing.
Yes, it would. And unfortunately, you're not going to have it as long as Sony and Fox are making money off of their Marvel properties.
Right.
I mean, does it matter that Amazing Spider-Man 2 really wasn't loved by critics and really didn't, you know, make a ton of money at the box office? No, it doesn't. Does it matter that Fox has pretty much ripped apart their own continuity with Days of Future Past? No.
I would love to see how the Fantastic Flop is going to even possibly fit into the X-Men continuity, if that's even happening. Because there's been talk of the crossover there as well, between those two franchises.
Well, I mean, at some point, the X-Men have interacted with just about every single group, character, whatever, in the Marvel Universe. So that's understandable as well, especially if it's like the Fox subset. It's like the Fox suburbs of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Yeah, it just makes sense that they would do that.
Right. To me, it almost seems like, especially with Fox, you have a better chance of seeing the Fantastic Flop crossover with Justice League from DC before you see anything happen with Fox and Marvel.
Unfortunately, it sounds like that you're looking at pretty much the same situation with Sony, because there have been reports of yet more hacked emails out of Sony. And it's a bad time to be Sony. It really is a bad time to be Sony. Because, first of all, you've got some shareholders who are saying, we need to get out of the entertainment business and go back to electronics where we belong. Then you have, you know, the emails that have come out basically saying, yes, the discussion of trying to bring Spider-Man into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it wasn't just a rumor. That did actually happen, that there was talks about it.
Right.
And according to reports in the Wall Street Journal, there were internal emails regarding Spider-Man, which Sony Motion Pictures chief Amy Pascal was corresponding with various executives at Marvel and Disney. And this was as late as October 30th.
Yeah.
You know, but the problem is, according to these emails, Marvel would produce a new Spider-Man trilogy, but Sony will retain all the quote-unquote creative control, marketing, and distribution. That's not a partnership.
Mm-mm.
No, that's and as long as Sony keeps that attitude, that ain't happening.
Right.
Yeah, Marvel wanted, according to these emails, Marvel wanted Spider-Man in Captain America Civil War.
Right.
Which is understandable, because in the Civil War storyline in the comics, Spider-Man did play a pretty central role.
Right.
So, yes, it's understandable we bring him in. But I think what Sony has so far been unable to realize in all this is that Spider-Man needs the Avengers much more than the Avengers need Spider-Man. Simply because the Avengers, Tony Stark could take a crap in his hand and put the Avengers logo on it, and people would buy it. It's just, it's at the point, it's a juggernaut.
It's the Avengers shawarma dude.
That's it. But you're not going to be able to dictate terms to Marvel.
Right. Well, and with the Avengers, too. I mean, look at the various, in the comics, look at the various team members you've had as well. So, Spider-Man's more important he needs the Avengers, like you said, more than the Avengers need him.
And I'm talking about it from a franchise standpoint. I'm not talking about, like, from a pure character. Because Spider-Man has been an Avenger before, but never for very long.
Right.
It's not to say he's not a team player, but he's better by himself.
Right.
He'll team up with somebody, and that's great, but partnerships never, he's not a group person.
Right.
Now, what's also interesting is that some of these hacked emails also reference the spinoff projects that Sony apparently has in the works, like the Sinister Six movie and a Venom movie and an all-female Spider-Man movie.
Yep.
So, and plus, you know, Sony's also planning an animated comedy. And the people they got working on that is like the ones behind 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie. And I'm thinking, you know, if that's the case, this may actually make the Fantastic Flop look watchable.
I think you're going on a stretch there.
It's going to be close.
It's going to be close.
I enjoyed the Lego movie. I enjoyed the fact that I, you know, did not waste any money on 21 Jump Street. But nothing good will come of that, I don't think.
Right. Well, all I got to say is let's talk about my little friend. You can say hello to him if you want. And I'm doing a really bad impersonation.
Do I need to say hello to your little friend?
Need to say hello to my little friend. When Guardians debuted in the theaters, it was obviously an instant hit.
Yeah.
Now, one person, Al Pacino, called the film amazing, inventive, and beautiful.
Which he would be right.
Right. Well, I hope so. Hoorah! He knows the scent of a woman. Sorry. Bad
point. Please tell me you have finally seen Guardians.
I have finally seen Guardians.
Okay, good. Yeah. Now that it is out on DVD, Blu-ray, video.
And
digital.
Pacino was on the Sad and Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. God, even the title makes me happy, sad, and confused.
Well, I think that's the idea.
Okay. Pacino reveals that he has since met with Marvel Studios and its president, Kevin Feige. And when asked if he thought there was a part in store for him, his response was, I would imagine either there's something he feels is right for me, or... Then Pacino's phone rang. Every time we talk about Marvel, that's what happens. The phone
He's
rings.
Got Marvel radar in his phone. It's kind of like, it's almost like summoning a demon. Though.
See, I think Marvel's is actually S.H.I.E.L.D. And they have his phone tapped. But like many others, Marvel has met with several different actors over, and you know, whether anything comes up, it still remains to be seen. But, I mean, there's still a number of movies where Pacino could find himself in. Maybe Doc Strange, maybe Guardians 2, maybe Black Panther, maybe Captain Marvel. Which I think Captain Marvel, to me, would be one of the better fits. Inhumans, another possibly great fit for him. Or Avengers Infinity War. I mean, that's essentially naming off all of Phase 3, except for Civil War.
Yeah, no. Just looking at a recent picture of Pacino, I don't know that I would. No, it's not Rod Stewart. Not Scottish enough.
But look is close enough.
I would say Al Pacino might make a fairly good Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
Could. Yeah, you think about it. I mean, he could be. He's got the experience of being a villain.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you know, he'd be. I think he'd be a very good counterpoint to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be my fan cast. If Al Pacino wants to be in a Marvel movie, and yes, of course, obviously he does, I would. That's where I'd put him. That is where I would put him.
Right. Like I said to you, I could see him potentially in the Inhumans as well. He's one of the more patriarchal characters, which escapes me at the moment.
The one character that I think people would want to be is Black Bolt. But
he's too old for Black Bolt.
He is too old for Black Bolt. And with that man's acting ability and his voice, he would be wasted on Black Bolt.
Yeah. Well, Vin Diesel has been supposedly vying for the Black Bolt role, which is fine, because then he doesn't have to talk. That might be a good thing for once.
Well, you know, I mean, he pulled off his lines in Guardians pretty well. Granted, he only had 5 words, but...
Right. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the Riddick films.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Triple X film, where he played Xander Cain. I enjoyed him in Saving Private Ryan. I mean, he's had some great roles. Fast and Furious has turned me off a little bit.
Well, he's the type that there are certain... that he's good for. You're not going to see Vin Diesel do Shakespeare, okay? You're not going to see him do Tennessee Williams.
But you know, if he did Shakespeare, I would go see it.
If
it came on the big screen, just to see if he could do it.
Yeah, but that's outside of his range.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would give him credit for having the chops to try and go outside it, but I mean, that's... And it's like, for the same reason, you'd never see John Wayne do Shakespeare.
True.
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger.
True.
It's just there are some, you know, that some roles are better suited for him, and that can do it.
Right. So I would say, hey, give us a shout on MMG, like Mighty Marvel Geeks, at WeebieGeeks.net, and let us know what Al Pacino character, or Let us know who you think Al Pacino could play or should play or want to see play in an upcoming Marvel movie. And then we'll talk about it when we come back from the holiday break. Next week, we're doing a best of show where we're going to recap 2014. But because, you know, there was one great thing that came out in 2014, game-wise, that's Disney Infinity 2.0.
Yes, the Marvel superheroes.
And I'm going to turn it over to the game guru.
Okay, yes, back in September, the Disney Infinity 2.0 came out, and it was, for all of us who enjoy Marvel and enjoy video games, this was kind of, we've had Marvel games in the past. Some of them were good, some of them not so much. But I thought that Infinity was a really good step up. It was a very good vehicle for Marvel because you had the toy box, which is, you know, your giant sandbox application,
right?
And and Marvel's website just recently ran a Q&A with a guy by the name of Quinn Johnson. He's a former freelance comic book writer, and he came to Disney's attention when he was a super fan for Infinity. He would do just so much with the toy box mode, and so that got him noticed at Avalanche, the software company that put together Infinity. And so he has the storytelling chops, he has the superhero chops, you know, monsters and all that. It's all that been very big passions of his. He has a brother that started working for Avalanche on Infinity a while back, and he basically kind of got him in. And what he does primarily at Avalanche is he makes these how-to videos.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how he works with, you know, doing the videos showing how you use the new Creativatoys. And these Creativatoys are, they're toys that, it's like triggers and trap platforms. It's just things, they're almost like a cog in a machine. It's like you do one thing, it'll set something else off. Like you push a button, fireworks go off. You link them up to an enemy generator, and all of a sudden you're surrounded by frost giants. Those are the kind of things. And he gets to put these things together in videos, basically just showing off all the different things you can do with them. And really, there's a lot. And somebody said, Marvel asked him, what are some of the cooler, more interesting things you've seen users do with the new toy box? He says, one that comes immediately to mind is the Hulk sick level by this one user, where Iron Man gets shrunk and has to go inside Hulk's mouth, lungs, and stomach to fight off a nasty infection. I don't know that I would have come up with that. But
that sounds interesting. Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah,
didn't they do an Avengers Assemble? Well, no, it was something different. It was with the tachyons or something like
it,
that.
It may have been
with Ant-Man and Tony shrinking down, looking for atom particles.
Well, it's a trope that's been done a lot of times before. So I guess it was a matter of time before somebody did that, but. It's still something I probably would not have come up with playing on mine.
Yeah.
He is, as you may guess, he is a huge fan of the toy box because, especially on 2.0, because, and he's right on this, it's so much more user-friendly this time around. They streamlined a lot of stuff to make it easier to play, and it's bigger and more extensive.
Okay.
So you could spend hours upon hours upon hours just creating stuff. And there are very few limits on the whole thing now. So that, I would agree with it. I'm looking forward to see what Infinity 3.0 brings our way. I'm guessing it's going to be Star Wars. Well, there's already Star Wars in the first two. In the original, your reward for getting all of the figures is a lightsaber.
Okay.
This time in 2.0, your reward for getting all the figures is Luke's land speeder.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's like they're hinting towards this, and I'm really certain that 3.0 it's going to have Disney original stuff. It's going to have Marvel stuff, but it's also going to have Star Wars in it. And God, I can't wait till that happens.
Infinity is something. I have a Wii, So 2.0 will not work because I need the Wii U.
Yeah.
But I am so tempted. I mean, I love the Wii concept just altogether.
Yeah.
I really do.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, eventually as the Wii U becomes a little cheaper, Disney Infinity is going
to... Do it.
Hey, are you hearing that?
I don't hear anything.
Okay. It's just the voices in my head.
Do it. Are the voices in your head a little louder than normal, Mike?
Yeah, because I'm an audio guy, so they're ramped up.
Do it.
So, on that note, I am going to say we will be right back after the short break. You're listening to Mike and Eric on Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Source War Radio.
Crisis for the geek kind. Top geek officials admit they underestimated the hipster's defense capability. Join the geek revolution and save the galaxy. Geeks from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future. They're doing their part. Are you? Want to know more? Join Weeby Geeks and the Geek Revolution and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship. Listen to Weeby Geeks podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or online at weebygeeks.net. Weeby Geeks, your voice for the geek revolution. Want to know more?
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio. Version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better, stronger, faster.
Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next. Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness.
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Rebel Force Radio. With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sorcerer Radio, SRSounds.com.
Chip and Company is your daily Disney fix for Disney news, park planning, giveaways, and so much more. Visit our friends from Chip and Company at chipandco.com to get you up to date on all things Disney.
A magic beyond anything you could ever imagine.
Meet the Magic is a site where you can find Disney sites, blogs, and fun new Disney friends. Learn how to save money or make your trip more magical.
Prepare to have your senses awakened.
Visit meetthemagic.com and follow her on Twitter at Meet the Magic, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
It's an adventure too magical to miss.
Woohoo! That was scary.
Dan Barnes here, inviting you to take a ride with me on an all-new edition of E-Ticket Time. I'll be playing the best ride-through audio from all your favorite Walt Disney World attractions. No fast pass required here. Just tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern, only on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
Are you a fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel? Well, look no further than JediMouseketeer.com. On the Sneaky Fan site, you'll find the latest news, videos, information on movies, comics, and more. Check out JediMouseketeer.com and follow him on Twitter at JediMouseketeer, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
Remember, the Force will be with you. Always.
Getting ready for your next visit to Walt Disney World? Well, why not check out Disney Trip Tips Fridays at 1 p.m. on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com with me, Sandy Alexander. Disney favorites from the parks, resorts, movies, and TV, and the tips that the family and I have used on our many visits to Walt Disney World. And if you have any tips or photos you'd like to share, you can post them at the Disney Trip Tips Facebook page. You can even follow me on Twitter at Disney Trip Tips. Disney Trip Tips on Sorcerer Radio. All Disney music all day long. SR Sounds.
I am a god, you dull creature, and I will not be bullied by that.
Puny god.
And welcome back to Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio. It is Mike and Eric. I don't know.
And some disembodied voices.
Yeah, thankfully that break, those voices I was hearing went away. So, could have been a hydroplane.
Yeah, it could have been.
So
it could have been Jarvis just trying to experiment with some subliminal technology there.
That could be. That could be.
I wouldn't put it past him. He's a sneaky little bugger.
True. But you know, it was just one of those moments.
You know, I thought we were having a moment.
I was having 12% of a moment.
Okay, that was a little bit more of a moment than I was having, but...
Well, as Groot said, it's better than 11%.
This is true. This is true. So, speaking of Groot, some Guardians news.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been living under a rock for the past week or so. You may not know. Well, you know, that's not under a rock. You're behind a rock in a fate panel and, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
That yeah. See? But there, it's a magical fate panel. But anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy, or as I've called it to a friend of mine, the Dirty Dozen in Space, arrived on DVD and Blu-ray this past Tuesday. And... okay, this is the one thing that really irritates me, the way that this is going now.
Oh.
Bonus features used to be didn't matter where you got it from. It was all the same stuff. Now you got Best Buy saying, well, this is exclusive bonus content. And then you've got Walmart going, well, we have exclusive bonus content. And then you got everybody else and their brother having their own brand of exclusive bonus content. And so you gotta, if you want to get all the bonus content, you've got to buy like 17 different Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And...
but you know, I might buy the various versions of Star Wars on Blu-ray, DVD when it comes out, but each one of those, the special features were the same at every location. It's just each packaging had more and more special features.
Yeah, I just... now, fortunately, one of the special features that was not on any of the... I'm just going to go ahead and call it... I got my Blu-ray from Walmart, and some of the bonus features that were in there I liked. I thought it was... and this is where the everybody has different exclusive content. You wind up with, no matter what you get, where you go, it's going to be lacking in the bonus features.
Right.
You're only going to get a handful of stuff, like the one coming from Walmart. You got the gag reel, you got the featurette with James Gunn, you've got the visualization of like Rocket and Groot and the rest of the visual effects, and you've got what was it? You've got the audio commentary with Gunn. That's really about it.
Right.
And the what little you get is good, which you just don't get a whole lot of it.
Yeah, I mean,
but it still makes you hungry for the sequel. I tell you, else is hungry for the sequel? That would be Michael Rooker, who played Yondu, and a very different Yondu than the one that I remember from the comics.
Yeah,
Andrew Dice from Screen Rant caught up with him and was asking him questions about the. He he's going to be in it when they come out with the sequel. And so you don't know where Yondu is going to particularly go with it, but you know where he came from.
Right.
And basically, Gunn wrote the Yondu character with Rooker in mind. Now, Gunn is known for bringing in people he knows, you know, his friends and and co-workers in previous movies. And so he, you know, he's got a good relationship with him. And he told Rooker that he had mentioned to him that he was going to write something in Guardians for him. And he was thrilled, but he didn't know what it was going to be. And when he finally told him, he kept trying to, you know, he kept coming in and he had a lot of questions for him, was asking stuff about the character. And at one point, Gunn told him, hey, just stop reading the comics. It's going to be changed and we're going to do some different things with it. So, of course, he says he didn't stop reading the comics, which is good. But the question of how Yondu would play into the sequel or like even the next Avengers movie after Age of Ultron.
Right.
He says he thinks Yondu would be, if he would be a good guy or a bad guy, because really Yondu has potential for either one.
It's like an anti-hero.
Yeah, he's very much an anti-hero. I think he and the Punisher are pretty much, well, maybe not quite cut for the same cloth. Maybe more him and Deadpool. But
yeah.
Just the kind of like, do I fight for the good guys or do I fight for the bad guys? Well, it depends on who's got the bigger bankroll. And I think Rooker's got a good line on it. He said he thinks that Yondu would pick the side that best suits him and probably what would garner him the best money. You know, he's worked for himself first and foremost. And he says he likes being a little mixture of both. And you can tell that's rubbed off on Star-Lord's character, because when he says, you know, what do? We do something good, something bad, a little of both? Yondu is definitely a little bit of both. But he is looking forward to number two, definitely. He doesn't know anything about it yet, but he's looking forward to it.
Very cool. Very
I think
cool.
So are we all.
Yeah. That was almost a Battlestar Galactica Easter egg there, even though it's not the right company.
Almost.
Almost. Speaking of which, well, not necessarily Battlestar Galactica, but, you know, we're still sticking with Marvel, because that's what we do.
Yeah, it's a Marvel show. I think we should talk Marvel, you know, a little bit.
Reed Diamond brings on the bad guys in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or M.A.O.S.
But he did.
Well, he did. Yeah, he did.
He did. He's kind of suffering from lead poisoning at home.
Oh, bad pun. That was a bad shot.
No, actually, it was a pretty good shot.
It was a shot in the dark.
Yeah, there you go.
Of course, you know, Reed Diamond played Daniel Whitehall. And, of course, tail end of most of the season, a major role, was a recurring character through the first half of the season. You know, Diamond just... He says he's relished the opportunity to play an out-and-out villain and bringing a measured menace to Whitehall that makes him even more terrifying. He was questioned, one of the questions he was asked over on Marvel.com. You mentioned that you went back and tried to figure out where he fit in the Marvel villain spectrum. Where do you land with that then? Would you place him between Red Skull and Loki? Bold comments from Marvel. Reed's response was, Loki's got a great sort of malevolent humor, and I took little ideas from all of them. I remember when I created this whole workbook for Daniel Whitehall, and on the cover I put Loki's quote from The Avengers, I'm burdened with this glorious purpose. What a great quote.
That is a great quote, and it actually, I never thought about it before, but that really does fit the character of Whitehall.
Yep. He goes, because I think the hardest thing for me is I've played a lot of bad guys, but I've never played a supervillain. Heretofore, I've never played someone who really believed that they were the best person to rule the universe, or at least the Earth. I hadn't really delved into that sort of megalomania and it exists in the world. Not only did I rewatch all the movies, but I also watched as many documentaries on the Nazis, you know, which
makes
Hydra
sense.
And Nazis kind of went together. Because obviously that's where Hydra was born out of. The idea that there was a master race and that there were people who were built to run the world and they were going to reinvent it. Then later, another question that comes up is, when you were developing Whitehall, what is it that you found was his central motivation? Why is it he thinks he's the guy who can control the universe and run it the best way? He replies, I always felt that he thought he should rule the world because he thought he was the smartest man on the planet. It was all intellect, because he's obviously not a man who ever dirties his hands. I got other people who are the muscle. That's why I love the scene where Kyle MacLachlan comes in as the doctor and that he starts killing all the poor redshirt Hydra agents. Nod to a certain franchise.
All right, yeah. Nod to the Trekkies.
So he just offs them, and Bakshi and I just stand there. I sit there because I know I've got some other device in the room where I can eliminate the doctor, knowing that no harm is going to come to me. He also has a sick intellectual curiosity, and I love in that scene, he also wants to see what the doctor's going to do. He doesn't care about any of his lower henchmen. He could get 100 more in a second. So he just wants to see what this guy's made of. You could catch more of this interview over on Marvel.com. It's the Wee Diamond interview. But yeah, I mean, it's stuff like this. It shows that, you know, he really, a character that was in a sense created for the show, that he just really developed and really made his own. And yeah, gave it a place.
He did, and this is the kind of villain that really just gives you chills. Because with the Red Skull, yes, he was power hungry, he was emotional, he just had this grand rage,
right,
that says, you know, I want to rule the world because I do.
Right.
And then you have Loki. Loki, he wants to rule the world because he feels entitled to it.
Right.
It's not the rage, it's not the drive to do it. They have completely different motivations. See, you know, Loki's like, well, I'm a god, therefore, you know, hey, I'm the one most qualified. Whitehall, the vibe that I got from him is, it's not that he wants to rule the world, he just thinks he's the best qualified to do it.
Right.
It's like, if you want something done right, you gotta do it yourself. And I'm the most qualified to do it, so it might as well be me.
Right. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It just had its mid-season finale. It won't be back until
March.
Wow. Yeah. Because Agent Carter.
If you're listening and you, for some whatever lame excuse reason you've got for not having seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you don't want spoilers, you might want to turn the volume down for a few minutes. Just saying.
There's a DC podcast on somewhere.
Well, go watch Katy Perry on Netflix or something. No, really, this is night and day from the first season, because at this point it was very slow. You needed time to build up the momentum where you start caring about the characters, you start setting up the main cast, and this is where you build on that foundation, and I think they have just done a fantastic job of doing so.
See, I think last year, season one, ending with the bridge cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that should have been before Thanksgiving. That should have been around Halloween. I mean, there were at least three or four episodes last season that did not belong.
Well, they, in all fairness though, they really could, the whole focus of this show, and looking back on it now, it just kind of like seems obvious. The whole appeal of this show was going to be how the big events from the movies affect the little guys.
Right.
Now, the thrust of this show was not going to really get going until Winter Soldier.
Right.
So you basically had to string it out.
Right. But, you know, did we really need the Graviton episode? Because that came back during the Winter Soldier, you know, through in Uprising, and had barely a mention. Oh, look, here's Graviton.
Well, if he comes back at some point, that's your origin story, and his barely mentioned in the Uprising. It's just to say,
okay,
hey, don't forget about him. He's still out.
Right, but, I mean, for the device to make an appearance, you know, near the end of season one, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, that was pretty irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean,
it seems irrelevant at the time, yes, but if it comes back, if they bring him back and he's got the powers and all that, then it seems more relevant.
Right.
It's like, I'm just going to go ahead and go full tilt in this. You tell me something irrelevant, I'll tell you something irrelevant. Trip's death in the winter finale, that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
That to me is a very much a useless death. And this is what I really had an issue with on the finale here. Is that, oh, look, I see my friend getting covered in this cocoon stuff. What? There's the object that I know will kill me if I touch it. What am I going to do? I'm going to karate kick the thing. And then you just, when he dies, it's kind of like, it reminds me when Tasha Yar got killed in Star Trek The Next Generation early on. It was, there was no point in it. There was no sense in it.
Right.
And so when you have Skye busting out of her, you know, cocoon, and she, the first thing she sees is her buddy, the grandson of a Howling Commando, just start disintegrating. It just didn't feel right. I knew, because there are Whedons at work on this show, that somebody we like is going to die.
Right.
Well, we thought it was going to be Skye. We thought it was going to be Fitz. Now we know it's Trip.
The thing that killed me was half of that was so dark, you couldn't see what was going on anyway.
That's true. Well, it made the special effects budget a little bit cheaper.
Soundstage with the lights off.
There you go.
So,
but speaking of Skye,
excuse me, that's Daisy, according to her dad.
Yes, Daisy. The rumors have been swirling around the internet, and the one that seems to keep popping up, and this is making too much sense for it to be ignored, is that we have seen the intro to the character known as Quake.
Oh, look at the power she did possess, or yeah, debut at the end of the finale.
Yeah, I mean, she was basically, she wasn't, when she broke out of the coating, she wasn't like moving around like somebody with super strength would do, just to flex it off. No, she just stood there as the whole stuff just vibrated off. And of course, that doesn't do good for the petrified Trip, who's like sitting right in front of her.
Right.
As, you know, did any of these other people that got killed because they touched the obelisk, did they disintegrate? No.
Nope.
Well, they just turned to stone. But this guy, Trip, is just starting to disintegrate and blow away in the wind.
Right. Well, what happened to the other gal? I mean, we
don't know. I mean, clearly she is probably an inhuman.
So my wife brought up a great question. Is she Skye's sister?
She does look kind of Asian, maybe a little. I don't know. I can't say that she would be sisters from both parents.
Right.
If they were half sisters, I could see that. But
quite possible.
It's very possible. And here's another theory that's coming out. Her dad, Kyle MacLachlan, is actually Mr. Hyde.
Who
is a doctor. He does possess super strength. He does have tremendous control issues, and they both have the same name of Cal. So and both in the comics, Quake and Hyde are, you know, father and daughter. Over here in the show, father and daughter. There are too many similarities that are coming together.
Right.
And I'm just really thinking this is probably what's going to transpire. Is it's going to be Quake and Hyde.
Now let me ask this: your thoughts of this season through the finale?
I liked seeing the relationship between May and Coulson develop. I have seen rumors that May's ex-husband is going to be showing up, and it's Blair Underwood. And I'm thinking it really needed to have been Coulson, because that would have explained so much.
Right. Well, maybe why May's ex is her ex is because of Coulson.
Well, that's a possibility. That is a possibility. I like the introduction of Mockingbird.
Yes.
I thought that was a very logical and a very good choice to bring her in. I love how they introduced her without introducing her.
Yeah.
Because, when she's, you know, when she walks into the base for the first time and Hunter sees her, and you realize that the ex-wife that he was telling so many stories about was her. I mean, I think I laughed for an hour after that. and I like that. Overall, I think this season has done a whole lot better than last season.
I think so. The first half of this season, I think the tempo's right, the flow's right. There's no waste of time, so to speak. Last season, it's like, even they were trying to find their groove. They thought they were going to go a specific direction, and you could see, no, we're going to go this way. It almost seems like they were confused themselves on where they're going. And, oh, we've got a Thor tie-in. Well, I'm sorry. The episode with Lady Sif and Lorelai should have happened first half of the season with the movie, not second half with the DVD release.
Yeah, but I agree with you.
You do the Sif episode, then you do the lower class Asgardian episode.
Yeah,
you know,
the Berserker, was it?
Yeah. You do those back-to-back, you're tying in Thor for 2 weeks. The bridge finale shouldn't have been the finale for the midseason. It should have been Skye getting shot.
See that?
And then you go on from there. This season was great. I was happy with how it ended for the season, or for the mid-season.
Yes.
The flow's been awesome. Even though each episode kind of has its own story arc, or is part of a part two story arc, you know, one, two episode story arc, the overall, you know, with Whitehall, the long-term story plot as well, didn't get lost, and it helped act as a common thread for everything else.
So it makes you wonder, above and beyond the whole Skye and her father angle, you wonder where you're going to see Ward and Agent 33 show back up.
Yep.
Because, you know, that's a major plot thread. Right. Are they going to be enemies? Are they going to be allies? Are they going to be
frenemies?
Both. Yeah, frenemies.
Frenemies,
I really
with
think
benefits?
That's, yeah, well... I think it's hilarious because you had Ward getting intimate with May, and now he's running off at the end of the episode with somebody who's got May's face.
Right.
So it's kind of like, well, I didn't get May, but I got the next best thing.
True, true.
And at the end, you saw Fitz and Simmons embracing, so you kind of wonder where that's going to come through. I'm finding myself drawn in with those two.
Right. Well, I noticed too, after being down in the city, even in a hazmat suit, it almost seemed like it might have cured Fitz just a little bit.
Well, he's working the cobwebs out. I think that was the big thing.
Right.
You know, he's got to get better, and it's like working the soreness out of anything else. You get back into the groove by doing stuff. You can't just sit around and do whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Carter, but I really am looking forward to picking back up with you.
Right. I agree. This time I am looking forward, and not just going, okay, one, I'm watching it because of Mighty Marvel Geeks, or two, I'm watching it because I'm a superhero fan, and I want to see what happens next and will it improve. This one, no, I'm on edge waiting for it. So
you're not watching it because you feel obligated to watch it.
Correct.
You're watching it because you want to watch it.
Right. And for a while there, I was watching it because I felt I was obligated to watch it. Yeah. So
pardon the interruption.
Wow. Jarvis beat us to the gun this week.
Guess so.
So, well, this is going to be for new comic book day of, the what? God, I can't see my calendar. 17th. I should remember that for some other reason. We have six books for you that we think you should check out on December 17th. And like most Marvel books, it's, if you buy the physical copy, you get a digital copy. That's two books for the price of one.
It's a BOGO.
It's a BOGO. Because if you just get the digital book, it's the same price as the physical copy. So, my first pick of the week is Captain America and the Mighty Avengers number 3. It's written by Al Ewing. It's an Axis tie-in. You're dreading it. You've dreamed of it. Now it's here. The Avengers War, with Captain America and Iron Man bringing the full power of the Avengers against the Gem Theater. Can our hero survive? It's guest starring from Sony Entertainment. I'm sorry. It's the comics, not the movies. Guest starring Spider-Man. But which side is the wall crawler on?
That's a very good question.
I have to read it.
My first pick is the all-new Captain America number 2, written by Rick Remender and penciled by Stuart Immonen. I need to stop trying to pronounce these names. I'm butchering them like making sausage out of it.
See, the more we butcher, the more we tell them, hey, we've been butchering your name. Come on the show, tell us how to do it right, and we'll fix it from that point on.
Yeah. Could be just I'm getting old and just can't see the screen as well. But anyway, the new Hydra has formed, comprised of the most ruthless villains of the Marvel Universe, as the great infiltration continues. Cap uncovers the ultimate goal of the new Hydra, but is it too late to stop them? Cap and Nomad's new partnership is put to the ultimate test as they race to uncover the sect of the unknown.
Ooh. Well, my second pick for the week is Black Widow number 13. Writer is Nathan Edmondson. Penciler is Phil Noto. The world has turned against Black Widow. Oh, poor Scarlett Johansson. Her web is broken. How will she deal with this? The final path to chaos is at her feet. But will her own demons keep her from finally taking it? What happened to Isaiah? Can Black Widow still turn to the Avengers? Or even S.H.I.E.L.D.? The creative team celebrates the first full year of their astonishing, unbroken run. Wow, I didn't realize Black Widow's been out for a year. So congrats to you guys.
Awesome. My second pick is also written by Nathan Edmondson. This is Deathlok number 3. And I used to collect the Deathlok that came out in the mid-90s with, I believe, written by Dennis Cowan. And
right.
I've got several, and I met the man, great guy, and I like how they interwove some social issues, particularly like racial issues, because Deathlok was a black man, and you know you don't have a whole lot of black comic book heroes,
right?
And which I think there needs to be more of, but not in a fake, cheesy, politically correct, hey, we've got a quota, look at us kind of way. But anyway, this is the new Deathlok series, obviously, because it is number 3, with penciler and cover artist as Mike Perkins. This is where Deathlok is tasked with infiltrating a hostage situation in Stuttgart, Germany. But why? S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Andrea Hope has a lead in her investigation into Henry Hayes, but she'll go to an Avenger for help.
Interesting. Well, my last pick for the week, this one I'm really looking into, and I'm seriously considering. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be picking it. Avengers Now, number 1. The official handbook of the Marvel Universe is back with 64 pages of all new profiles. Every new member, Angela, Captain Universe, you know, Devereaux, Nightmask, Adam, the Superior Spider-Man, and more. Enemies, the Apocalypse Twins, the Black Order, Magnetron, Ames, Scientist Supreme, Andrew Forson, Allies, Nick Fury, Phil Coulson, Nova, now Sam Alexander, Avengers Underground, Hazmat, the entire Avengers roster makes an appearance thanks to an update appendix for every single member.
Wow.
64 pages. I'm figuring this book's probably going to be $4.99, $5.99.
If we're lucky.
But you know, it's absolutely worth it.
Yes, it sounds that way. My final pick of the week is Guardians of the Galaxy number 22. This is part 3 of the Planet of the Symbiotes. Now that Venom has led the Guardians to this devastatingly dangerous planet of alien symbiotes, will the team ever trust Flash Thompson again? I'm thinking no.
I
could
be right.
Wrong.
You might be right.
But I have trust issues, like Nick Fury. Not quite to that degree, but still.
Security breach.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. It's been a pleasure to have you guys listening to us, like always. Like I said earlier in the show, Eric and I will be back next week for a special 2014 recap of all things Marvel. Our best of, our worst of. If you have your own best of or worst of, email us at MMG, like Mighty Marvel Geeks, at WeebieGeeks.net, and give us what your best of anything Marvel, or your worst of anything Marvel, and we'll hit it on the air next week. So until then, any final words, Eric?
No, I think you hit it pretty nail on the head.
Well, on that note, it's time to go dark.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.